Hello and welcome to Series 1 of the podcast The Heart of Teaching, produced by Hibernia College. My name is Aoife Lynham, teacher and researcher, and in this podcast I speak with educators from a variety of fields and ask them about the teachers who inspired them to get where they are today. So join us as we meet the inspirational for a little bit of inspiration. I'm really delighted to welcome Daniel to me to the studio today. Daniel has had many roles. He's a post-primary PE teacher, a personal trainer, an academic and entrepreneur skilled in coaching, researching and public speaking. He's currently also completing a Doctor of Philosophy in Trinity College Dublin. His research is focused on physical activity and positive mental health. I'm really excited to sit down with Daniel today because he plans on talking to me about his time as a teacher, well-being in the classroom, his research and the Core Four. So today I have asked Daniel to sit down with me to talk about his time as a teacher, well-being in the classroom, his research and the Core of Four. So welcome, Daniel.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
So the first thing I kind of wanted to talk to you about is maybe letting everyone know a little bit about you. So can you tell me about you, describe yourself as an advocate for well-being. So can you tell me a little bit about how that came about?
Yeah, well, I am a PhD researcher in Trinity College Dublin in the area of physical activity and mental health, or positive mental health. So in a word, that would be well-being. But how it came about, I suppose I created based on my experiences and especially an experience with ill mental health in my early 20s. So that's what has created this passion that I have for well-being, I guess. Mm-hmm. But my research now is kind of solidifying everything.
Okay, and you were a PE teacher as well. You still are, obviously,
yes.
But you're a full-time PhD candidate now. But tell us a little bit about why you decided to become a teacher.
Yeah, well, I suppose I was very fortunate enough to have two great role models in my parents. So my father was a PE and geography teacher as well, same as myself. And my mother was a primary school teacher, junior infants, and had been for all of their careers. And, you know, I grew up with that and I saw their lifestyle and I saw their, you know, standard living and, you know, their opportunities to spend time with their family. Like any time when I was a child and I had my holidays, so my parents, it was just lovely. Mm-hmm. So and I was fortunate enough to do a good leaving cert and had lots of opportunities and lots of options, but I just followed my heart and went with, you know, what I was passionate about and what I knew I would be happy doing for the rest of my life. So mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm lucky in that sense.
Good. And what was your favorite thing about teaching?
Building relationships with the students. I got on very, very well with my students. I was a teacher in two different schools in Cork, St. Aidan's Community College in Dublin Hill, and also McKeegan College in Macroom. And two very, very different schools, one very large urban city centre school and one very small rural school. But I got on very well with the teenagers in both places. So, you know, I am such a passionate PE teacher and so would be so interested in health and fitness. So that helped my subject I was passionate about and I am passionate about. Also teaching geography. That was, you know, interesting too. But I'm very much a people person and, you know, I was lucky enough to meet a lot of lovely young people and, you know, and I'm still in contact with them. You know, a lot of my ex-students now follow me on social media and they're comfortable now sending me messages and it's just, you know, it's nice. And a lot of my social media I use to, you know, spread the good word with regard mental health and well-being. So it is nice knowing my students are still, you know, getting the benefit of that.
When you mentioned their relationships, it really reminded me of John Doran. He wrote Ways to Wellbeing and he gave a seminar for students at orientation day and he was like, "There's main thing in teaching is like three O's, relationships. So
I'd agree with that because like the students, they'll forget what you taught them or tried to teach them, but they'll never forget how you made them feel. And, you know, and vice versa. Like, I still remember how great I felt teaching these students. So,
Is there anything that you'd recommend? Because obviously we have a large number of student teachers. So if you have people who are trying to learn ways in which to build those kind of relationships, what are things you can do to build relationships, do you think, with pupils?
Yeah, I think the number one rule for me, and this is definitely something I inherited through my father, it's give respect and get respect. And deal and speak with your students, not in like a condescending top-down manner, just like speaking with them as if they are, you know, students are just younger versions of ourselves. They're like younger human beings. And it's like, of course, they don't have the same experience or education because of the chronological years, the amount of years they have had. But like, don't speak with any less respect than you would with your colleagues or anybody else in your life, because that, like, students from my experience and like witnessing it with other teachers, they don't respond well. And I got a lot of respect from my students, but that's because I gave them the respect first. So if you want to build relationships like you would in your social life, like, respect, it's just, it's crucial. And still, you know, you are the leader, you are, you know, dictating and you know, cultivating the progress of the class and what direction you're choosing to bring it in. But you're the leader. You don't have to be, you know, you don't have to be imposing yourself as a disciplinarian or, you know, something that's autocratic. You know, it's just giving respect. You will get it back. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and if there was a reason for you to be more authoritarian, well, that's okay then. But you don't lead with the stick. I don't know, like, so I would say respect and you will get it back.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember one time I was visiting a student at teaching practice and she was very quiet spoken and she kind of felt, oh, maybe am I doing this whole classroom management thing wrong because I'm very quiet and everything, that am I supposed to be loud and kind of giving out and getting attention? I was like, no, it's actually really lovely to have a quiet, calm, lovely atmosphere. And I think that comes through respect as well, that you're creating kind of a respectful environment. But in terms of your research, you were doing a lot, you've mentioned, between positive mental health and exercise. And can you tell us a little bit about what maybe the literature is saying about the importance of that for young people?
Yeah, like for young people or people regardless of what age. I was in speaking yesterday. I did a talk with the Retired Association in Trinity. So like these people were in their 60s and 70s. And the same for them. It's just like we need to move for our health, whether it's physical or mental. We need to move. It's how we're designed as human beings. So we need to be moving for 40 minutes to an hour every single day. And three of those days, we need to exercise at a higher intensity that, you know, our heart rate is up there, that we're sweating, red face, panting. And like at that sort of intensity, regardless of the individual, that's just what we need to be doing. And that's going to benefit us physically and it's going to benefit us mentally. Our anxiety will be reduced. Our stress levels will be reduced. Our concentration levels will be improved. We'll be more alert. And so that's just factual. That's just the way it is. Also, when we exercise, chemicals within our systems are being released. So endorphins, you know, there are, it's a chemical reaction to a physical movement and we can't stop that even if we tried. And that's, you know, there's nobody ever felt worse after exercise. We mightn't look forward to it. You might enjoy it while we're going through it, potentially. But afterwards, you always are grateful that you did it and you feel better. And, you know, if you want to feel good about yourself and, you know, if you want to be happy, I would recommend exercising habitually. Just get it done and build it into a lifestyle so it doesn't feel like a chore. So for me, I don't have to plan my exercise. I don't think, oh, today is a gym day. It's just like part of my life. And, you know, and it makes things easier then.
For people who it's not maybe part of the life, I remember when I kind of gotten out of exercising, I nearly had to convince myself, right, 20 minutes, I'll do 20 minutes and that'll get me in. And I'd feel, you know, and then I'd do longer than that. And that would be great. But is there anything, any advice you give for someone who might be listening and find themselves kind of stuck in a rut and not finding it easy to get motivated to go to the gym?
Yeah, absolutely. And I do know that I'd be a kind of an outlier in that respect in terms of modern society, that it's not as easy for everybody. And even myself, if I had, based on being injured or being on a holiday or whatever, and, you know, you have to, you know, restart and, you know, motivate yourself. But at the start, that is difficult. So it's the start is what stops most people. So it's just a matter of motivating yourself at the start and getting those first 2 weeks out of your way where you have to proactively think about it and, you know, engage with your exercise regime. And then after the 2 weeks, it's kind of a habit that you've developed and you don't have to think about it so much. But it's just the start, and don't let the start stop you. Just be proactive to start. Like, there are people like myself who are personal trainers that will like help and motivate, and you'd have to be accountable to. And if not, and if you aren't in a position to kind of go to a professional, it's just a matter of, you know, getting off the couch and just like timetabling something into your weekly schedule and, you know, being self-motivated and self-driven at the beginning. And then eventually it just comes part of your day to day, and then it's easier, but it's the start. Mm-hmm. The start's a difficult part.
I remember actually when you're speaking, it brought to mind a friend of mine used to, what she used to do is to kind of to motivate herself. She would get up in the morning to go for exercise. I think it was a run she used to go for, but she found she wasn't doing it. So she used to go to bed in her gym clothes to take that barrier away. So that she actually, but I don't know if that's a bit too extreme.
It's not. Whatever it takes, like whatever it takes to make things easier for you. And, you know, there are things, you know, like exercising in the morning is the best for my, like, you know, my subjective opinion. It's just that if you get out of your, you know, if you do get the exercise in early, well, that's your exercise done for the day. You don't have to think about it anymore. But also you're getting the benefit of it for, you know, the 16 hours that you potentially could be awake. It's just like you will be more alert, you'll be happier, you're getting all the immediate benefits from it, you know. So if you get it done at the start, and also you're more efficient, your cardiovascular and your nervous system are like those systems are shocked into place from early exercise, so you can transmit messages throughout your body in a more efficient manner, so you can actually study better, you can, you know, concentrate more if you're in the office. It just makes sense. So but, you know, self-motivation then, you know, getting out of bed at, you know, especially in this weather, you know, it's like it's nice and warm and cozy in bed, it's harder to get out, but you should try.
Okay, brilliant. Well, I've heard you talking before about the core four, so can you please share that with everybody else, because I think it's brilliant.
Well, thank you very much. It is something that, you know, I have created from my research, but it's just I suppose an easy way to remember what we should be doing with our day-to-day lives. So if you want to be as healthy and as happy as you potentially could be, you need to do four things habitually, and this is not the elite four or the super four, it's the core four, and every single human being on the planet, you know, should be doing this. It's so every evening you should be sleeping for 8 hours. If you're a primary school student, you actually need more. You need closer to 10 hours. But an adult would need 8 hours sleep per evening. That during that time, your body is recovering, growing, resting, and those hours are just crucial. Like if you're lifting weights and you want to put on muscle, that happens when you're asleep. If you want to, you know, be more relaxed and like reducing stress levels, that comes from having the break at nighttime. So the more you have, the better it is. So we would recommend 8 hours per evening on average. Now there will be exceptional circumstances. There will be students that will be doing exams, or life from time to time may hinder that, but on average, you should be getting 8 hours of sleep per evening. When you are awake, I'm so glad that you have provided me with some water here on this table. So that's the next point. You need to find 5 glasses of water per day, four, or the equivalent of 4 pint glasses, or that equates to 2 liters of water. So for homeostasis, like for nothing else, just so for all your cells and organs and systems to work in the best possible way, you need 2 liters of water in your system. And you need to be intaking that. So if you're exercising at a higher level, or you're in climates that makes you sweat more profusely, you need more than that. But like across the board, we need 2 liters, which is 5 glasses, which, you know, if you're awake for 16 hours, you should be able to find 5 glasses of water. The third element or factor of the core four is nutrition. So nutrition by definition, or nutritional foods by definition, contribute to health and or growth. Unfortunately, in modern society, there's a lot of things we're eating that contribute to either. So we're eating just for the taste, and unfortunately, we just excrete without taking anything from it. So that's not nutrition, unfortunately. That's something else. That's wasting time and having something tasty. But it's your diet day to day should consist of nutritional foods. Oscar Wilde was the first person who said this, but it's like, you know, everything in moderation, including moderation. So from time to time, you can have exceptions. We are coming up to Christmas. You know, there are going to be circumstances where you mightn't be eating completely, but 80% of the time across, you should be eating nutritional food. And then the other 20%, you can enjoy yourself. That's my philosophy, and it works for me. Mm-hmm. And then the final one is your exercise. Every single day, regardless of demographic, gender, you know, age, all of this stuff is quite irrelevant. You just need to be moving for 40 minutes to an hour every single day. Three of those days, as I alluded to earlier, has to be high intensity. But every other day is just move. Like this sedentary lifestyle, that's a modern phenomenon and so, so unhealthy. We need to be moving. Like it's just how we are designed. But yeah, so I guess that's my core four. It's like you sleep 8 hours, and when you're awake, you find five glasses of water. Your nutrition and your diet day to day should consist of healthy foods that contribute to your growth and your health. And then you got to move. You got to exercise every day. And, you know, there are ways, like people are, you know, against exercise because of the thought of going to the gym or playing sports, or it's not necessarily the case. Like, there are lots of fun ways to move, and it's so individualistic and, you know, specific to the individual. And I know I'm coming from a fortunate perspective where I've always played sports, and my dad was a PE teacher, and I had a lot of opportunities to move in a way that, you know, excited and interested me. But there is something for everybody. Go for a cycle, climb a tree, jump in the water, like whatever. Just move, don't sit on the couch. And if you just find you were like, everybody has 24 hours in every day, it's what we do with them that counts. My father told me that, and like, you know, he was a teacher to lots of people, but he was very much a teacher to me. So 24 hours a day, it's what you do with them. That'll you know, dictate the quality of your life. But for one of those hours, just move.
Okay, brilliant. And I love that you actually repeated it all at the end again with reminding us of the core four. You're a real teacher now. I suppose just when you're mentioning there about the food that we eat and sometimes it's not very nutritious, I just was thinking there, you know, there is a lot of primary, post-primary students that we'd sometimes have concerns about, that there seems to be nearly an obesity epidemic in some ways, particularly with very young children, and we'd see it in our classrooms. Like, what are your views on that? I've heard kind of different things where maybe in the morning time they'd bring kids out and they'd all run around and kind of get a bit of exercise done in the morning. But I suppose, what can teachers do to ensure, or have you any advice for teachers who are trying to deal? I know can't always be the teachers in the schools who solve the problem.
We should try.
Can help, I suppose, what kind of things would you suggest we can do to help?
Well, like, from my experience, like, I was a secondary school PE teacher, or post-primary school PE teacher, for 6 years. So as much as I wanted to help everybody, and I really did, you know, we are restricted by the constraints of our timetables and things like that. So there's only so much that we can do. Education, first and foremost, we are teachers, and it's imparting this knowledge and these value systems so that you'd hope that the students will maybe take that home, and, you know, when they are with their parents or with their families, that they can, you know, verbalize what they're being told at school, so then they can build it into their lives outside of school. But once the students are within our care, like, physical education is massive, like, and it's exactly that. It's physical education. It's imparting this knowledge and these values. And, you know, that's a big part of primary and post-primary teaching. Physical activity is just so, so crucial. So, like, extracurricular activities, giving students the opportunity to take part in things that, you know, would appeal to the students, and, like, in an extracurricular sense. And that, again, will take extra responsibility from teachers, you know, that will want to take it upon themselves to set these things up. But when I was a PE teacher, I taught as much dance, gymnastics, like anything. And I used to set up clubs. I'd set up volleyball clubs and badminton clubs just to give every student the opportunity to do something that will allow them to move and also find something that they might be talented in. So it's just giving the students every opportunity to be healthy. And when in terms of, like, obesity and the students that are overweight and children that are overweight, it's the calorie surplus. So, like, it's with the intake of calories and how much they're burning off. So it's a balancing act. It's like, well, if you're going to be taking in calories, can we, like, either limit or make sure that are really healthy calories you're taking in through your good sources of, you know, complex carbohydrates and protein and things that will actually benefit us, and then getting students to move more, because then you're burning off the calories. And so it's a dual kind of process there in terms of balancing how much calories are being taken in and how much is being burnt off. And, you know,
I think knowledge is power as well. If you give young people that knowledge, I think it's so important.
So powerful.
I actually remember when I was in primary school that PE was nearly used as a punishment. That was kind of like, if someone misbehaved, none of us got PE. And I think that's definitely something I don't think we'd really see that much anymore. So,
and I hope not.
Yeah, I just think that it's so important that every week, I think it's an hour they get in primary schools. And is it similar in post-primary?
Yeah, well, 80 minutes. So a dual class that we used to get. But and, like, things are improving all the time. Like, I was blessed, right? So, like, my father was the head of the PE department when I was a student. And like the other PE teachers were brilliant. Like we had like Kieran Daly, who is like an ex-Cork footballer, Micheál O'Sullivan, ex-Cork footballer, and you know, Aidan McGarrell, ex-Kerry footballer. And like, it was just, there was a real value placed on physical activity and, you know, physical education. It was just like, I got such a great experience. And then I just came out and was like, well, like, I presume every other school is like this.
No, wasn't. Mine wasn't.
No.
Mine was terrible.
And I got it from home as well.
It was terrible.
And that's the thing.
Yeah, I remember just standing nearly at a wall, just bouncing a tennis ball off a wall. It was terrible.
It's so bad.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of students then that, like, if they don't get it from their schooling, if they don't get it from their teachers, they might get it anywhere else. Mm-hmm. So, like, I was blessed that I had it at home and had it in school. But it's just, and then when you actually think about that as a teacher and as a PE teacher, you're so conscious. Like, I was. It was like when I was teaching the school, I was like, well, this might be all the students get. They might get it from home. They might have the opportunity to do it outside of school. It's like, well, I got to make this count. I got to, you know, avail of every minute I have with them. Because, you know, teaching is, it's more than a profession. It's a vocation. It's a calling. And we have so much responsibility and, you know, we have so much power in a positive way to influence young people's lives, because we are creating, you know, human beings and adults and, like, you know, contributing members of society. And don't discount that, and don't, like, discredit the influence that you can have. And it is wonderful, because the students do listen.
I suppose something I've heard you talking about before as well is mental health and men. And I suppose I often think the influence we can have with young people who are in primary and post-primary school, particularly among young boys, to get them talking and being open. Tell me why you think that stigma maybe is out there, particularly when it comes to men. Obviously, it's there as well for women. Women can struggle, but there seems to be something a little bit different about men.
Yeah, like it definitely is. It's like, you know, the bravado and the, you know, you know, the boys and men wanted to be macho and being strong. And actually developed, it's from the like a warrior mentality that we've developed from generations of, you know, so once upon a time, men were, you know, warriors, and like they saw other men as either friends, unknowns, or foes. And the strong men killed their foes, were questionable about the unknowns, and like would really kind of, you know, support and defend their friends. But it was us against them mentality, us against them. And like the strong men used to kill the weaker men, and the strong men would be lauded and celebrated and applauded and raised, and the weaker men might be, you know, less so, you know, and held in less light in society, and, you know, almost ostracized or felt, you know, they wouldn't, you know, be respected in the same way. And even though now nobody's, you know, we're not warriors, there's no need, like, I can't remember the last person I've killed, or, you know, or I had somebody come out. So it's just, but we haven't evolved in the same way. So we still have this. It's like, well, I can't show weakness, because then it'll make me a weak man, and then, you know, I will be less respected, and I will be, you know, alienated from the society, and then the strong men will be, you know, we've got to be strong. It's so unhealthy. It's toxic. And it's showing your weakness. Like, I was in 2008, like 10 years ago, I was suicidal. Like, this is what made me so passionate about this. I had real struggles with my mental health, but I knew that looking for help was actually portraying strength. And I did. And as difficult and all as it was, I'm here because of that. So showing or asking for help and, you know, showing that vulnerability and knowing that you can't do everything by yourself is actually a demonstration of strength. It's not like an expression of weakness. And I just feel as though men haven't evolved in the manner in which we actually should. And it's like the mask of masculinity is another thing. You know, it's like we have to keep this mask on, and, you know, we can't talk about anything except the superficial, and we won't talk about our feelings. And it's bizarre, and it's also so unhealthy and so dangerous. And it's like, and I think we are improving on that, and there's a lot of more role models in, like, you know, international society now that would be more open to these conversations. And, you know, that it does like filter down and does have influence, but I am so proactive about it. Like, I am just, if I want to shout from the rooftops about this stuff, so to help others, you know, because it's so crucial, you know, for guys, but for everybody, just to know that they can talk about anything. Like, health is health. And, like, it doesn't matter. And also, like, showing a bit of vulnerability actually solidifies and increases your reputation. It's like, from my experience, like, 100%, I can say that, like, absolute surety, like, that last year I ran a Dublin Marathon. I posted a big story about mental health and my own mental health because I was fundraising for Pieta House at the time. And, you know, I got a lot of respect. And, you know, mm-hmm. I feel as though people have even greater admiration mm-hmm. because I showed that vulnerability because I'm helping mm-hmm. others. And it's mm-hmm. and also it's just if you're strong enough to ask for help, you know, you're going to be like once you do get the help and you improve, you're going to be more resilient and mm-hmm. there'll be, you know, you get it's definitely going to benefit you going forward. Mm-hmm. So I think there is still a problem with guys talking about these things. It stems from our own insecurities. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, that is the case. But it's improving. And I think, you know, from this discourse and the dialogue becoming more, you know, normal, mm-hmm. that it will improve even further. You know, but it does take people to keep the ball rolling. Mm-hmm.
But I do think as teachers, we are at the forefront. And so we have that power to influence and help young people if we are maybe. I think it naturally fits in SPHE where you can have these conversations about coping skills and all of that. But it also can be cross-curricular that these conversations can be had in PE. It can be had in English if you're reading books about it. You know, it's just about allowing those kind of natural conversations to happen. Mm. So just, I suppose, have you any resources or books or anything that you could pass on that you think, oh, you should go here, you should read this, you should, is there anything?
Within like the sphere of mental health?
Yeah, either mental health, anything, just okay. any kind of resource well, for us to yeah. send us on our way to do a bit of homework.
Okay, well, I am an absolute bookworm. Like, I just love reading books. Like, I'm actually going to Australia on Monday. I was saying earlier, but it's so I am actually like tidying up my room and put like most of the boxes are books like that I'm packing away at the moment. The Power of No is great. Eckhart Tolle, just brilliant in terms of like, you know, bringing yourself and realizing what's important and being in the now and being in the moment. Mm-hmm. And that's all we have. And it's really, really strong, powerful. Also, The Little Big Things. It's a wonderful book about an individual who lost the use of his legs and, you know, how he prioritized life afterwards. You know, mm-hmm. it's The Little Big Things. It's really strong, really, really good. I'm reading The Alchemist at the moment again. Love that one
I've
too.
I've heard someone else talk about that recently. Oh, it's on my list.
It's great. It is great. And again, it's a novel. It's a story, and it's nice because a lot of the books I read would be, you know, nonfiction. Mm-hmm. I read a lot of like, you know, books about, you know, improving mental health, how to support others. Mm-hmm. You know, just kind of more. You know, like that, like helping education mm-hmm. in terms of educating myself and helping others. So they would be more kind of prescriptive and it's nice reading a novel and reading a story. Yeah. The Alchemist is a great one. So I suppose they're just three to sprung to mind. I could list another 33.
Tell me and we'll put it on the website.
I will. But they, Power of Now, The Little Big Things and The Alchemist. Read
those. Brilliant. Great. Thank you. And so it's just a final question. If you had a magic wand, what would you do to make some kind of change in education in relation to mental health and well-being?
Well, first and foremost, I think there's a lot of progress being made within Irish education at the moment, which is great in terms of, you know, introducing well-being, etc. But if there was one thing I could change with a magic wand.
No pressure.
On the spot. I would have, almost having a class or just a facility where students can have a safe and open space to talk about anything that is, you know, that might be at the forefront of their mind, regardless of what it is. Just, and I know there are like counseling service provided in schools, but maybe just a class where, like, you know, mindfulness could be, you know, there could be an opportunity to do a bit of meditation, talk therapy. Just, it's so hard to say because I want to change so much, and hopefully I will get the opportunity to do so. But allowing children to talk about the real things in their lives without any judgment, without any stigma, so to say, mm-hmm. to anything, but it's such a massive thing to change, like within the societal norms of a schooling system. But just, I would love for every single primary and post-primary student in Ireland to be able to verbalise exactly how they feel and what's important to them without any judgment from their peers mm-hmm. or otherwise, because that would solve so many problems. talking mm-hmm. and discourse and dialogue yeah. is absolutely crucial. Mm-hmm. Now, it does come, unfortunately, with like experience and confidence, but wouldn't it be lovely mm-hmm. if you were born like that and nothing had changed? Like,
and if you had a magic wand to do that.
Oh, well, listen, well, that's exactly my yeah. answer. So I would love, if I had the magic wand and could change one thing, I would just love for every student in Irish schools to be able to express how they feel and be 100% them mm-hmm. because, you know, that would solve a lot of our problems.
Brilliant. Well, I think you've definitely started a lot of dialogue and we've continued it on today. So thank you so much, Daniel, for your time.
You are most welcome. Thanks for having me.